This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
They need to be able to finance buffers and climate resilient agriculture and so forth. And they also need to finance transitioning into a low carbon, more resilient, socially responsible and inclusive economic growth path.
That's Kevin Gallagher, director of Boston University's Global Development Policy Center, saying African nations need serious debt relief to deal with climate shocks, and they need it now. Details coming up. Also, the leader of the coup that ousted Gabonese President Ali Bongo was sworn in today, and Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa was sworn in to a second term in office. All these and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The first African climate summit began today in Kenya with heads of state and international organizations advocating for a stronger voice and more financing to combat the impact of climate change on the continent. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Leaders, diplomats and global representatives have gathered in Nairobi, Kenya for the Africa Climate Summit, an event focused on addressing the devastating impact of global warming and climate change. The summit aims to tackle the challenges posed by increased droughts and flooding that have made millions of Africans poor, sick and hungry.
The way we frame these discussions matters. I invite all of us to adopt opportunity lens as we navigate these complex dialogues. For a very long time, we have looked at this as a problem. It is time we flipped and looked at it from the other side. There are opportunities, immense opportunities as well.
Eastern African countries have grappled with severe droughts in recent years, leaving over 20 million people needing humanitarian aid, according to UN agencies. This past year, Nigeria has faced devastating floods, displacing over a million people and worsening food security. Migration from affected areas, growing competition over natural resources and water scarcity due to changed rainfall patterns have also increased the risk of violence and conflict in Africa. Paul Ekwar is a community worker who works with Wetlands International in northern Kenya. His community relies on livestock as a source of livelihood. Persistent drought has killed animals, wiped out pastures and threatened peace between his community and its northern neighbour, Ethiopia. Ekwa says Wetlands International has set up a system to manage the effects of climate change.
We are helping communities do receding of degraded rangelands. That improves the environment and the environment because it will increase the pasture and the livelihoods. And through that we also support sustainable peace and coexistence among the communities living along the border lines, so that through that they are able to live together.
Delegates at the conference are discussing Africa's attempts to transition to cleaner energy sources and ways to obtain financing for climate change adaptation. African countries have consistently called for developed nations to contribute greater funding to combat the adverse effects of unpredictable weather patterns. Frederick Kwame Kuma of the African Wildlife Foundation says Africa can use its natural resources as a bargaining chip in the negotiations.
Africa needs to use the biodiversity world to leverage conversations now, not just for the past, but even into the future. Because our biodiversity, like I said, is a third of the world's biodiversity asset. That's a carbon sink, which we should build upon. But we should also use it to have this conversation about what should the world give us to protect the resources we have that provides, in a sense, a global good to everyone.
The conference will conclude Wednesday with the outcomes and reports shaping the statement that African heads of state will present at the 2023 UN Climate Change Conference, known as COP28. In the United Arab Emirates, Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi, Kenya.
As we just reported, Africa is hosting its first ever summit on climate change. Kevin Gallagher, professor at Boston's University School of Global Studies, who spoke on various panels at the summit today, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that he and other authors of a new working paper have found that due to multiple external shocks after the COVID pandemic started, sub-Saharan countries in particular need huge debt relief in order to meet the Paris Agreement climate targets.
The inconvenient truth is that it's going to be really difficult for them to do that because of the international economic environment that they're in at this particular moment in time. Right now, according to other estimates, African countries need to mobilize about 10% of GDP a year to respond to climate shocks like the floods in Nairobi and in Nigeria and in Durban earlier this year, or the droughts that are plaguing a lot of the countries in the region and making it difficult for them to export. They need to be able to finance buffers and climate resilient agriculture and so forth. And they also need to finance transitioning into a low carbon and more resilient, socially responsible and inclusive economic growth path. And the countries just don't have the financing there. They really need it from the international community.
Getting to that point, how much should multilateral banks provide in debt relief to sub-Saharan countries in particular to give them that fiscal space that you talk about that they need to achieve for reaching those Paris Agreement commitments?
Yeah, we estimate that only 10 countries in the entire continent have the foreign borrowing space that would allow them to finance their climate finance needs on an annual basis. So we call on the international economic architecture to do three things. Number one, as you alluded to earlier, provide more liquidity. A lot of these countries need short-term finance to just keep things going. That means enlarging the International Monetary Fund, which is on the agenda this year. That means replenishing some of the special windows for African countries within the International Monetary Fund, like the Poverty Relief and Growth Trust and the Resilience and Sustainability Facility. In addition to that, we need the multilateral development banks, and this is on the agenda this year, to expand the level of capital that they have and to use more with the capital that they currently have. Many countries are going to need debt relief.
But when you talk about these multilateral banks and this kind of debt relief, you're talking really big numbers. If I'm not mistaken, you were saying somewhere in the neighborhood of between $13.4 billion and $34.5 billion. Do you think that that is going to be realistic?
Yeah, so African countries have had the largest increase in the amount of debt distress since COVID started and the highest levels. Their debt has tripled to $539 billion. The biggest place that they owe that money to are multilateral development banks like the World Bank and the African Development Bank. Second are private bondholders like PIMCO and Standard Chartered. Third are Chinese banks. And fourth are Paris Club governments like the United States or France. There is a framework in place at the G20, which is limbering along, not very well, but it does engage the private bondholders, the Chinese, and Paris Club countries. That needs reform. But the MDBs have been exempted, and we call on the MDBs to play their role. Depending upon the kind of country, yeah, it could be upwards of more than $20 billion of relief that they'd have to provide. And they'd have to do it in a very cautious manner because we really need the MDBs now more than ever in the region. They can't just write off the debt like the Paris Club can, like China can, and like private bondholders should. They need to preserve their credit rating so they can continue to lend.
That's Kevin Gallagher, professor at Boston University School of Global Studies and director of the university's Global Development Policy Center. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam from Nairobi. Central African merchants and Gabon's civilians who were stranded in Kiosi, a southern Cameroon city, are pleased that Gabon's military is reopening the borders that were sealed after a coup removed Gabon's president, Ali Bongo Ondimba, from power. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Kiosi.
Scores of traders at a popular spot in Kiosi on Cameroon's southern border with Gabon and Equatorial Guinea say they are happy Gabon's new leadership has ordered the reopening of its borders. The traders are from Cameroon, Nigeria, Chad, and the Central African Republic. On Saturday, Gabon's military junta said it was reopening the borders 3 days after closing them during a military coup in which President Ali Bongo Ondimba was ousted. 26-year-old Gabonese truck driver Ngeya René, who has been stranded in Cameroon, says he is waiting for border troops to respect the military ruler's instructions and reopen the border so he can be with his family in Gabon's capital, Libreville.
Il faut être transparent dans la façon de les gérer.
Ngeya says he came to Cameroon to buy spare motor parts but could not return because the border was sealed. Ngeya says his wish is for the new leadership in Gabon to create jobs for civilians, especially young people who live in misery. Several Gabon government troops are still stationed on Gabon's side of the border. Hundreds of vehicles and trucks are stationed on both sides. Gabon's leaders said on state TV that land, sea, and air borders were opened because the junta wants to preserve the rule of law and maintain good relations with their neighbors and all countries of the world. Kosok Pierre is a lecturer at the Omar Bongo University in Libreville. He says the border closure and curfew in Gabon were part of security measures taken to protect the country from any potential embarrassing situation after Ali Bongo was ousted. He says Gabon's government should keep a watch over its borders by allowing troops to decide who comes and goes.
Ceux qui ont gouverné ce pays,
Kosok says it would be very wrong to think that Ali Bongo and his father Omar Bongo ruled Gabon for over 56 years and do not have friends who benefited from the oil-producing nation and want the Bongo dynasty to hold on to power. Kosok says civilians and the military massively support changes in Gabon's leadership, and the Central African state is taking precautions should any attempt be masterminded in a neighboring state to bring back Bongo. In 2019, Gabon closed border crossings with neighboring Cameroon after rebel troops appeared on state television announcing they had staged a coup against President Ali Bongo to restore democracy. The government of Gabon later said it had regained control and arrested 7 rebel soldiers. Gabon held elections on August 26, with Ali Bongo running for re-election. Contested results indicate 69-year-old Abed Ondo Osa, a former minister and university professor, won the poll. But Gabon's Center for Elections declared Ali Bongo the winner with 64% of the vote. Amid the confusion, Gabon's military announced it had seized power and placed Ali Bongo under house arrest. It's not known how long it will take to clear the backlog of vehicles stranded at the borders once everything is operational and moving again. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, KOC, Southern Cameroon.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa was inaugurated today for his second full term after a disputed national election in which he defeated challenger Nelson Chamisa. But as Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, the main opposition says Mnangagwa's re-election means another 5 years of economic stagnation and what they see as presidential illegitimacy.
At his swearing-in for a second five-year term, President Emmerson Mnangagwa thanked Zimbabweans for giving him another mandate. In his nationally televised speech, he pledged to work for the good of the entire nation, despite its many differences, including ethnicity, political affiliations, and religion. Mnangagwa never mentioned his main opposition challenger, Nelson Chamisa, and his Citizens Coalition for Change party. The coalition has called the election illegitimate. Mnangagwa described the August 23rd polls as free, fair, and transparent. He blamed unnamed detractors for sponsoring what he called mayhem ahead of and during the elections.
The will of the Zimbabwean people has been expressed and they must be respected. In unity, we have defended this sacred land, bequeathed to us by our great heroes and heroines. They paid for the democracy independence and sovereignty we are enjoying today with their precious lives. This thunderous victory for our sovereignty, dignity and right to be masters of our own destiny is in their honor.
Mnangagwa said his government would continue to work with other nations to achieve global peace, and he reiterated calls made by other African leaders to reform the UN Security Council. He said the council must reflect the equality of nations. International observer missions to Zimbabwe's election, including the Southern African Development Community and the European Union, pointed out what they called serious shortcomings, which they said meant the vote was not credible. After the inauguration, Promise Mkwananzi, the spokesperson of the Citizens Coalition for Change, told VOA the coalition continues to demand fresh elections.
Mnangagwa's inauguration is a monumental nullity. It's a monumental illegitimacy. We have to revisit the electoral process in Zimbabwe so that we can restore legitimacy. As it stands, Mr. Mnangagwa is illegitimate, is isolated, as you have seen. Very few heads of states turned up. And we advise Mr. Mnangagwa to lead the call for a fresh, free and fair election.
Only three heads of state, South Africa's Cyril Ramaphosa, Mozambique's Philip Nyusi, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo's Felix Tshisekedi attended the ceremony. Other states from the region send representatives. Wilbert Mandinde is a lawyer and the director of the Zimbabwe Human Rights NGO Forum and chairperson of the National Transitional Justice Working Group. He tells VOA there's still room for negotiations similar to the talks in 2008 when the late president Robert Mugabe held after a disputed election. The late opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai claimed he had won the vote.
This is not the first time that we have seen a president being sworn in, but there are some conversations ongoing. You will remember that in 2008, President Mugabe was sworn in and even went and attended the African Union summit, having been sworn in as the president, but received cold shoulders. We are not sure if the number of heads of states who came is indicative of the fact that others are already giving the president a cold shoulder, or that the notice period was too short for the other heads of state to come for the inauguration. But there could still be an opportunity for engagements if all parties are up for engagement.
There had been speculation that the opposition would file a court appeal over the elections as it did in 2018. However, the Citizens Coalition for Change has yet to do so and has said the courts are biased. Reporting for VOA, I'm Kudzanai Msengi in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
The World Food Program has released $12.8 million to combat the impending drought impact caused by El Niño in four southern African countries. The largest such payout to date will be used to implement efforts to safeguard the lives and livelihoods of over 500,000 people. The move, co-funded by Germany, the European Union and Norway, will help disseminate early warning text messages, distribute drought-tolerant seeds, and provide safe water for communities and livestock. It is also expected to protect people's purchasing power from reduced crop yields and livestock and decrease the likelihood of water shortages. Over 550 individuals will benefit in Lesotho, Madagascar, Mozambique, and Zimbabwe. The El Niño is anticipated to strike at a time when the region is already facing considerable stress, with approximately 47.4 million people facing severe food insecurity in parts of southern and central Africa. The elephant population in southern Africa has increased by 5% since 2016 to nearly 228,000, according to results of a first-ever aerial census conducted last year. However, there are concerns over the animal's mortality rate. From Habrone, Botswana, Mokondisi Dube reports.
The elephants are mostly found in a large conservation area, the Kavango-Zambezi Transfrontier Conservation Area, or CASA. CASA covers 520,000 square kilometers across Angola, Botswana, Namibia, Zambia, and Zimbabwe, and contains the world's largest elephant population. Presenting the census results Thursday, survey coordinator Darren Potisha said the outcome shows a stable population.
Overall, Across Gaza, the elephant population appears to be stable. However, there is some variation within the different regions. Some areas have shown possibly increases in elephant numbers. Most remain stable, and for some areas, potentially a decrease in elephant numbers.
However, he raises concern about the number of dead elephants encountered during the counting exercise. Over 26,000 carcasses were reported.
That's a high number, higher than what one would like to see. And it may be indicative of high mortality. And for me, it's important to raise this as a red flag for the health of the population. And it's important that we conduct further investigation to understand the underlying reasons for this high level of mortality.
Potiger says the reason for high mortality could be poaching, lack of habitat, an aging elephant population, or diseases. In 2019, Botswana recorded more than 300 deaths due to elephants drinking water contaminated with bacteria. Marvin Caridozo, representing the African Specialist Group, says the survey confirms their earlier predictions on the elephant numbers in Southern Africa.
The results confirm the African Elephant Specialist Group's preliminary population trends reports of stable to increasing. They further confirm the 2021 Red List assessment of African elephants that reported a stable or growing Kaza elephant population and the largest single population of the savannah elephant species on the continent.
The census shows Botswana is the largest elephant population, accounting for 58% of elephants in the Kaza region. Botswana's Minister of Environment and Tourism, Phil Takiring, says the survey will help in decision-making, particularly as the country faces growing human-elephant conflict.
What this report will do will help us to actually enhance and intensify, you know, the protection of both people and wildlife balanced together. We're also talking about the habitat, which I think is also important. We will know how better to drive more beneficiation from this resource to our people.
The survey was conducted during the dry season between August and October of last year using 7 fixed-wing aircraft. While Southern Africa has seen an increase in the elephant population, elsewhere on the continent the numbers are declining due to loss of habitat and poaching. Kondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
The United Nations says some 7,300 tons of food aid destined for Niger is stuck in transit due to border closures. This as the crisis-hit Sahel nation deals with sanctions related to the July 26th coup. According to the French news agency AFP, the UN says food prices have increased by up to 21%, a serious issue in a country where some 3.3 million Nigerians, or 13% of the population, are severely food insecure. UN agencies say over 7 million people, about 28% of the population, are at risk of falling into severe food insecurity due to price hikes and loss of livelihoods triggered by the ongoing political crisis. The World Food Programme says access restrictions are hindering the delivery of essential aid. The WFP has over 7,300 tons of food, including specialized foods for the treatment and prevention of malnutrition, that are stuck in transit due to border closures. The AFP says UN officials are worried that donors may pull out in light of the ousting of President Mohamed Bazoum. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.